Welcome back to Hash Rate Up. Today is all about 44 West. I'm speaking to Jamie from 44 West Mining, a, as they say, next generation mining company. They are running a family business, and we're going to talk all about that and what it's like to run a Bitcoin mining company as a family. Hash Rate Up starts now. Enjoy. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Hash Rate Up. Like I said in the introduction, very briefly, I'm speaking today with Mr. Terranova, Jamie Terranova from 44 West Mining. We are at block height 846889. Our hash rate 14-day below 600, 589 exahashes, and our hash price is at $64, roughly, which has been a long time since we were above that. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time.
How are you, Jess? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm great. A bit of an earlier recording for me, which is always nice. Typically, I record with folks across the pond, and then it gets quite late, and I have to really focus up at the end of the day. It's not always the easiest, but you're giving me a break from that. So I appreciate that very much, and thanks for getting up so early.
Absolutely.
Jamie, hash price about 64. What are your feelings? What does that make you feel? Does it release some tension?
It's a nice little reprieve given what we've seen since the halving. It's funny because it appears that fees have blipped higher. The question is whether that's sustainable. You know, if you look at the forwards markets, most of them are still pricing in the hash price in the high 50s. So that would indicate that the market's telling you that it's a temporary blip, but we shall see. It's certainly nice to see the higher numbers, you know, and a little healthier mining environment.
Yeah, because you mentioned fees, I'm just peeking over. It's 250 on the last show, or on the second to last one. I said to folks, like, get your UTXO straight now, because next time you listen to this might not be the case again. I hope somebody listened. Right. That would be a win. Do you know why the fees are at 250 right now?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything specific in the last couple of days. Other than being the end of one block and the beginning of the other, which sometimes produces temporary blips, but I haven't seen a specific reason other than that.
I mean, I went to the Bitcoin event in Hong Kong recently, right? That was very focused on ordinals and use cases for the blockchain and stuff. And I don't have any ordinals. I don't think much of it. And I don't even know where I am on the debate, really. But I wanted to figure out more about ordinals in general and what sort of the mid long term effect would be maybe on fees, because, you know, when clients come to me and they want to buy ASICs or hosting and I need to sort of forecast revenue scenarios, I want to have a better understanding, right, of what this is all about, because at the end of the day it has an impact on our industry. But what I sort of went out with, kind of disappointed, is that nobody could really tell me, first of all, what it was, like how it worked. These sort of special sets also a part of that. And there was no real clear answer of this is what it is and this is where it's going, which kind of leads me to believe, right, hey, this is maybe a temporary thing. And after all, you have to pay for these transactions as well. And it might just be another sort of blip that we've seen with other things like the NFTs and the metaverses. What are your thoughts on it? Are you sort of similar? Do you have a stronger opinion than me?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a similar to you. I don't have a deep understanding of ordinals and why the sudden surge. I mean, my understanding is they are NFTs built on the Bitcoin blockchain rather than on Ethereum or others. So I don't know what the advantage would be of doing it that way. As far as business planning in terms of mining economics going forward, it's very hard to use ordinal fees and support there as a, you know, predictor of what to expect going forward. So we're kind of, you know, we kind of view it as a, you know, as little understanding we have of it, in the big picture, we kind of view it as a nice little bonus, but it's certainly something we're not relying on.
When you say we, who do you mean?
So it's a family run business. So my two brothers, our father, and then we have partners in CSD Energy Advisors. So that's the we in 44 West Mining. We started it as a family business. With my brothers and my fathers as my partners, it's been a good run over the past couple of years, or even longer than that, since we've been on the as Bitcoin miners on the hosted side. It's been a good run with the four of us as partners building this business.
Okay, so you started hosting your own machines and then started building your own infrastructure?
Yeah, so late 2020, we started, we bought some hosted miners in a third-party facility in Illinois through a good family friend there. Prior to that, I had invested in Bitcoin a little bit, but just watching from afar, seeing what was going on with money printing and knowing that the world eventually needed an alternative to fiat currencies. And what are the alternatives? You have gold and other precious metals, but we know the issues there. They're not scalable. It's not really a practical, it's not really a practical means of transaction. So my thought from the beginning was there eventually has to be some other alternative that represents a store of value and has some monetary unit that you could exchange for goods. And to me, Bitcoin was the most likely of all the alternatives to be that. So from that investment thesis, we were introduced to a hosting facility. We knew nothing about Bitcoin mining. We didn't know what an ASIC was. So we were introduced and we bought a batch of maybe 20 S19s at first, and we were, economics were very good back at the end of 2020, particularly with the rise of price of Bitcoin and all the stimulus and money printing that was going on at that time. So we decided to reinvest. And then in 2021, with the China mining ban, which was the, single boon for all mining businesses, we decided to reinvest more and more until we got to a critical mass of machines where we made the decision to try to go and hunt for a site for ourselves.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, for all but the Chinese miners, I guess. Do you know what the BMN node is by any chance?
No.
So the Blockstream mining node, and I had Blockstream on before. They're releasing a second batch of these. Effectively, the Blockstream mining node represents hash rate as an investment, and they started mining just when the mining ban happened, right around that time. So that was also, for me, sort of getting into it, a nice sort of black swan event to see how the network was resilient and worked and stuff like that. Yep. Are you the one that got your family into this, or did you get dragged in by one of your brothers, I would presume?
Yeah, it was actually our father who takes pride in being, one of the oldest the crypto people out there, but still extremely involved, nice. Extremely, extremely sharp. And he made the connection with the facility. And from there, we made a collaborative group decision to invest again in, maybe it was 20, 30 ASICs and got, dipped a toe in. And then from there, instead of extracting all the money out, we decided to reinvest. And again, to the China mining ban was really the point in time when that reinvestment was rewarded, and it allowed us, the economics allowed us the runway to sort of invest enough to get to a point where it made sense to look for a site.
How of a time, when you say one of the oldest crypto people out there, how hard of a time did your dad have pulling you in? Because typically these things go the other way around, and it's very hard to push my parents or the generation above me and get them interested.
Yeah, I mean, we've always discussed different business ideas. So this was just another business idea. The fact that it's blockchain technology, and it tends to be understood better by younger people, did add a little bit of nuance to it. But I think when we came in, we had just a very cursory understanding of what mining was. And, you know, we've learned a lot in 4 years, but at that time, you know, it's basically like the meat and potatoes of the investment was this is the price of the ASIC. This is what it does. This is the downtime we could expect. These are the potential problems. This is the 3-year outlook. And we went forward with it.
Very cool. I mean, yeah, it takes, I mean, what did you do before you sort of went into this full time?
So we're all from traditional finance backgrounds. So I have been a bond trader for the last 18 years, currently still am, as a matter of fact. My father was a commodities trader for 17 years. Both of my brothers are in the traditional finance business. So, so this was a, you know, and none of us come from a programming or technology background. So this was a strictly a financial play in the beginning. And now, again, now that we've gotten involved, we understand a whole lot more about the technology and the inner workings of Bitcoin. But yeah, we initially got into it as a strictly financial play.
That's a very rare combination, Jamie. People from the traditional finance industry typically don't understand Bitcoin because they look at it from one angle and they'll call it a Ponzi, most prominently, right? No energy background, getting into mining. That's very interesting. What do your peers think about your current business idea that you're following here?
Well, I'm sitting here in New York, and I tell them that I run a Bitcoin mining operation in Wyoming. And I guess the initial reaction is, well, that's somewhat random. you know, it's some of the questions I get are, what are you mining? What do you do? What does Bitcoin fall out of the computers? And like, how does that work?
Still today? And then those are the questions?
Some. I mean, I think Bitcoin is becoming well understood, but the mining side of it is still a pretty closed, you know, pretty limited community in terms of people that understand how it works and what the inner workings are there. So there has been a little bit explaining to do, and then I go into the fact that we run the servers under, you know, immersed in oil. And I have to show a video of what that actually looks like. And yeah, I get some funny looks from that. But yeah, it's and then of course, why Wyoming? Why not down the street? Why are you doing it there? It's I get a lot of questions from people that aren't, you know, too exposed to it.
I constantly struggle to this day to explain mining. Jamie, how do you do it? How do you explain to your peers when they say, do they fall out of the computer? I'm sure they don't actually say that, but like, how do you explain it to them?
You know, I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, if you put an infinite amount of monkeys at an infinite amount of computers, they would eventually type the play Hamlet. Have you ever heard that expression?
I haven't, but I'm... It's
okay,
very good.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's a pretty good analogy in that, you know, you have these superpower computers built to do one thing, which is to send basically guesses as to what the algorithm is to the Bitcoin network. And I mean, again, so we don't even need to go into this level of detail because we're in a mining pool, so they do all that fun stuff for us, and we just get, you know, we just benefit from. But if I was going to explain mining to somebody, I mean, it would be just an infinite amount. It's not infinite, obviously, but enormous amount of hash rate or guesses going towards the algorithm to solve the block, which results in a reward.
I may have to explore this monkey idea with you a bit more to see how it stacks up against my dice roll analogy. Have you heard of that analogy? That it comes from a blog post that was released on Brain's blog, and they put it into a book. Yeah, hold on. Have you read this book?
No, I have not.
It's just a collection of articles that were released on the Brains blog, and one of them is about how Bitcoin mining basically means, you know, you get a dice with a 1,000 sides, and you keep rolling it until you hit a number that's lower than X, right? And then everybody can verify that and say, okay, this guy wins the round, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we'll get into that on a different note.
Sure.
When you guys, and I want to go back to the infrastructure bit, when you guys decided, hey, we need our own site, what were the main motivations to do that? Was it price? Was it access? Was it vertical integration, which is becoming a nice fancy word in the industry?
Yeah, I think vertical integration hits on it. I mean, we wanted to have control of our own operations. We had mainly good experiences at the facility we were in, but inevitably there's downtime, there's miscommunication, there's repairs that need to be done and don't get done on time. And this is with a person we really trusted. And then if you go outside of somebody you really trust in this business, unfortunately, it's very hard to navigate. So we wanted to keep everything in-house as much as we could. And we thought the way to do that, again, once we had enough of a footprint to actually do it, was to look for our own site.
Okay. All right. And then when you went looking, what did you look for specifically? When you say you don't have much of a background in energy, how did you know what to look for?
Well, we started from access to cheap power, relatively near a substation. You know, our thought from the beginning was we were gonna do some sort of modular design where it really could be anywhere. So we've added a number of sites, you know, and our criteria was ideally something close to us, but it didn't work out that way. But more importantly, something with access to low abundant power that the build out wouldn't be overly cumbersome.
Why did you guys, I'm just curious about the decision-making process there. Why did you guys not go through a sort of third party company that gets all the stuff together? You pay them a bit of extra money to acquire the site. They get you low power, power management, and all of that stuff. Why did you decide to do all of that by yourselves?
Yeah, we just thought among the four of us, we had the we had the ability to get out there and figure it out ourselves and not have to go through the third party. And, you know, we also thought that once we did figure it out ourselves, that would set us up for going forward, looking for a second, third, fourth, fifth site, and not having to go through a third party each and every time. So it was an option that we considered, but at the end of the day, we thought amongst the four of us and the physical energy that we had and the commitment we had, we could do it ourselves.
Okay. And you said you guys live in New York, all of you?
So we're in New York. Our partners are in Texas, and we have a team locally up in Wyoming that run things, okay. And we run some operations remote from New York as well.
What is mining like in Wyoming today? What made you decide on Wyoming as a state? Is there any sort of regulatory special factors that made you choose to go there?
Yeah, it's funny because as we were looking for sites, Senator Cynthia Lummis put out a tweet, which is a very generic tweet, something like, if you run a Bitcoin mining business or are looking to run one, talk to our office. And there was a number provided. I called the number, which led me to a gentleman by the name of Tyler Lindholm, who's written, who's written a bunch of the blockchain legislation for Wyoming. He comes out of the state Senate there, no longer in the Senate, but that's where he started, and he wrote a lot of that legislation. So Tyler handed us off to the Wyoming Business Council, who then handed us off to Powder River Energy up in the northeast part of the state. And the characteristics of that region there's a lot of excess power, a lot of excess generation, a lot of facilities built out. So crypto was really a perfect marriage for that area. It provides a stable demand on the grid. It allows them to light up some dormant facilities. So it's really a good match for the industry, and we found a site and a deal that made sense for us, and we moved on it.
Do you know what the power sources are for energy or for electricity in Wyoming?
Yeah, it's mostly coal, natural gas, a little bit of wind and solar, but it's a very big coal region. So again, we know what's going on with the coal industry, what's gone on over the past 30 years, and that's part of the reason why they have a lot of capacity out there.
Okay. Is it similar to other states in the US where a lot of industry may be moved away, which leaves a bunch of infrastructure unused? Or, you know, from the sounds of it, there's no constraints on power availability.
There's no constraints on power availability there. It's abundant, consistent. It's, you know, if, you know, part of our, you know, part of our thesis going there was that there should be the ability to scale because there are other sites, other facilities, once we execute on this first one that, you know, we have in our targets. But I think you're going to see that with any type of heavy industry that maybe is less active than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. For example, the facility we were in Illinois to start was a former steel plant that was no longer being used, that had excess power. And we've heard, you know, smelter plants and things, you know, tire factories, things like that, that, you know, facilities like that, that have excess power and that aren't supported by their industry.
Okay. Right. Jamie, on the site that you guys are on now, I mean, you guys are running, let's do that first. Tell me a bit more about what it is that you're running today, the design choices you've made, the machines you've chosen, and why.
So we're running 5 megawatts worth of immersion mining. And the reason why we decided to run immersion, there are a couple of reasons. The first and most important reason is because we, being from New York and, you know, having sort of a limited availability there, we wanted the option with the least upkeep and maintenance. And that's what immersion represents. The other reason is because locally in Wyoming, it can get extremely windy, dusty, driving snowstorms. All of those things can present problems for air-cooled designs. And then the third are the benefits that immersion mining confers: overclocking and better durability of machines, less repairs, less downtime. So for all those reasons, we went in that direction. And, you know, one other thing I'll mention is that another business line that we've been discussing is pairing our heat, the heat excess with another application like a greenhouse. And we've spoken to a couple of groups about doing that. That's possible with immersion. So those reasons, and, you know, we're pretty committed to building out that way going forward.
With the backgrounds that you guys explained, I would take it that you guys don't have experience when it comes to maintenance for machines and all of that stuff. Did your plan go up or not go up in flames, but did your plan work out in that way that you said, hey, we want to do immersion because we want to have low maintenance requirements? Did it work out that way or not really?
Yes and no. Versus what we would have dealt with in an air cooled design, we've had less maintenance issues. We've learned on the fly. So we have our site operations guy Tyler out there who's done a great job, you know, getting up the curve, learning how to fix machines. So we are, you know, that's another thing we've kept in house is troubleshooting machines, learning how to fix them. You know, whether that's, again, that could be a firmware issue, and we're doing a lot of stuff remotely as well. We're learning on the fly there, but we have, you know, we know a lot more than we knew 6 months ago. So, and we plan to continue learning and keeping everything in house to the extent that we can.
What was the sort of biggest hiccups, right? Cause I had Brad on from the Microminery Club, recently. And, so he's a big proponent of saying, hey, like, come learn from us. There's a bunch of mistakes here that you can avoid by going through our course or how to get started and stuff like that. Is that something in hindsight that would have been valuable? Have there sort of been any hiccups that were really critical to the business or maybe put it at risk?
You know, I think dealing with dealing with the heat during the hotter times of year there presents a little bit of a challenge. We've had to and we continue to have to mitigate higher temperatures on the equipment, and we've taken some steps to do that. But that is one thing that it's not like you put an immersion container down and you turn it on and you're good from there. It's servicing it. It's paying very close attention to certain metrics in terms of temperature and not letting a small problem become a big problem.
Okay, so it's even in immersion, you'd say temperature is still has to be considered. Because I would think as a layman, hey, like put them in immersion, that's fine, no problems anymore. When it comes to temperatures, they run. Problems will be elsewhere. But
And then you're subject to the ability of your coolers to keep everything at the right temperature, and then the ability of the PDUs to handle the electrical load, and that could add heat. So it's really, we monitor everything, obviously on a daily basis and extremely closely, and if anything gets out of range, we're quick to address it.
And are you guys close to any communities when you talk about heat reuse and greenhouses? Is there communities close by, or would you talk to greenhouse operators to say, hey, like put one here and we can sell you the heat that we have?
So the town of Gillette is about 40,000 people, so it's actually the fourth biggest city in Wyoming. It's not a small town. There's business there. There's a whole community there. So in terms of consumers, that's one way to go about it. We could try to sell locally. We could link up with a distribution partner that could take, that could distribute to larger cities. So there's a few different ways to go about it. We're kind of in the early stages of those discussions.
But when you plan this stuff, is it because of course, like if you run, I don't know, what machines did you say you're running?
So we have S19J Pros and S19 Pros running, and they're all in overclocking.
Yeah. If you overclock them, what efficiency are you getting out of them?
So the efficiency is around 30. So their nameplate is 30. The efficiency doesn't change a whole lot overclocked. So,
okay.
That's a target of us. That's a target of ours to improve our efficiency going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, you kind of have to, right? At hash price 63, it's a bit easier. But you want to prepare for the event of hash price 40, and then it gets iffy, right? You don't want to run these machines in immersion in the red. Do you have any requirements to consume power, or can you shut off at any point? Without any economic,
we can shut off at any point, which is one of the nice things.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, then I think, okay, look, what are the additional revenue streams that miners typically have in those regions? It's heat reuse. Even though, is there year round demand for heat when it gets so hot, anyways? And demand response. What are your options there?
Yeah, I mean, so we have a pretty robust demand response program in place to try to optimize our rate. That's one. But we are looking at a number of different revenue streams. Consulting is one we've considered quite a bit. Remote management. We're looking to get a little more into on the hosting side. So. We're in talks with a couple of different vendors about putting new facilities with the intent of hosting. So there's a lot of different directions we can go. And to your point, we have to prepare for hash price at 40. When we project out what our business is going to look like 6, 12, 18 months from now, we think hash price is going down. The S21s and 21 Pros haven't even landed yet for the most part. And then you have facilities being built out all over the world, and so we think that we're factoring hash price going down. We know that efficiency is the name of the game, so that's going to be our number one business focus going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting because especially like as a family business, you I would say have the advantage of making decisions very, very quickly. There's no big hierarchy structures, there's no shareholders, it's just basically you guys. and your capacity, and you can do with that what you feel. And there's no hard feelings if somebody calls on the weekend, if you know what I mean. Like, you 100%. Can make decisions very quickly. And Bitcoin works 24/7, so that gives you, I would say, a big advantage. When it comes to the community, you said you guys are close to a substation, so that tells me you're not too far removed from population centers. Was there any sort of debate there that you have to engage with the community in any way, or is it all pretty free and open when it comes to the people that live nearby?
Yeah, we are. So we're about 10 minutes from the town. So we're in the middle of, we're not around any houses. So no noise concerns. And we haven't really had to engage with the town a whole lot other than, you know, hiring out vendors and things like that. But, in terms of noise restrictions or anything like that, there haven't been any.
Okay. You said you're running 5 megs?
Running 5 now, yeah.
And you have, I read this, I think on the website, you have access to 20, right?
We have access to 20, yep.
And the 5 that you have now, is that all self-funded, or did you have a capital partners for that?
Also, it's all self-funded up to this point. Yep. So now as we look to expand the site, we're talking to a number of groups as to how to JV or a lot of different shapes of deals that we're considering. So, you know, again, our intent is to build out the 20 and then pivot to additional sites that may be available to us.
Yeah, because I had a discussion with a client or business partner of mine the other day of where, you know, where people get started and then where sort of the biggest pain points are. Do you think it's, you know, what is your preferred method and why, maybe when it comes to scaling up? Like, do you say, hey, we're going to build out the infrastructure and then we're going to host it because we only have capital for the infrastructure, but not for the miners? When you say JV, how do you make sure that, yeah, it's still, you know, that extra 50 megawatts still makes you enough money when somebody else brings the main part of the funds? Like, what is your, from your position, and maybe, you know, as a family, what do you prefer? How do you prefer this to go for the next 15 megawatts?
Our primary goal and secondary goal. So our primary goal is to turn over our current fleet. So that's number one, whether that be with a capital partner, with a lender, with, you know, whether we self-fund that remains to be seen. So our secondary goal from there is, I just, the name of the game is infrastructure. I mean, that's just, you know, we actually had a call this morning, with, amongst us, and, you know, Bitcoin mining may end up being a sideshow at the end of the day. The infrastructure is where the value is. So whether that be AI, cloud computing, there's a lot of different optionality where you're not pigeonholed into one specific function. And with that, an industry that turns over their machines every, you know, 12 to 18 months. So infrastructure to us is the name of the game. Getting that site built out and having the capacity in place, turnkey, is our goal.
Okay. Would you prefer working with multiple partners on something like this or just one larger partner? And maybe before you answer, where do you find these people? Because I frequently try to match up, you know, hosting sites, infrastructure with people who have the funds, who have the ASICs. And I consistently have a harder time finding those entities that actually have the buy side liquidity to say, hey, we want to buy ASICs and we need rack space from, you know, folks that know how to run their ships.
Right. You know, it's, there are a lot of different shapes of deals, and we're not representing any particular one of them. But I think for us at this point in time, it would be a partner in a manufacturer that would come in some sort of JV or some sort of equity, in-kind equity stake, something of that nature. And we think from there that we can source the demand to fill up space, over time, especially with the, within an overclocking environment and the advantages that immersion mining confers.
Okay. All right. Did you ever have any feuds amongst family members as to which direction to take the business?
Yeah, inevitably there's going to be disagreements in any business with any group of partners. Luckily, we have that underlying level of trust among us that really limits the amount of feuds. I would say our biggest ones were maybe in terms of style and pace of doing things, but nothing major in terms of direction, and certainly nothing. If we did have a difference of direction, it wasn't something, nothing that couldn't be talked, spoken through.
As I said before, I think the trust factor, because it's such a, it's still, I feel like Bitcoin mining, and it's often not covered, there's a lot of charlatans in this industry, a lot of people who, I don't know, I would personally not like to deal with on a professional level, right? And being on Telegram kind of exposes you to that very frequently. And so having like a trusted group of people must be very, refreshing almost, and a big benefit to making decisions, as I said before, quickly. You guys all have financial backgrounds, right? I want to ask you a bit about an aspect of vertical integration that I will try to cover more on the show also when it comes to treasury management, right? You guys are perfectly positioned with your backgrounds to measure the finances of your company. How do you approach treasury management as 44 West? And also, is there any special legislation that makes it easier or harder in Wyoming when it comes to taxation, for instance?
No, if anything, it's easier in Wyoming. They're favorable. There's no corporate income tax, so it's favorable in that sense. So in terms of treasury management, it's fairly simple. Our strategy is to hedge against our expected production with straight vanilla put options, which is a strategy that's worked really well for us. We look at that as like a 3-5% haircut off the top line. And that's how we lock in, we're able to protect what we have against our obligations. So that's our general strategy. As we grow, I think we can get a little more creative with the Bitcoin proceeds. We might look at lending against some of our mining proceeds in terms of lending against our mining proceeds and generate some cash that way to reinvest into facilities. So we're not there yet, but right now it's a very straightforward sort of mine and hedge type of strategy.
And it's all one company. It's all in this one entity.
It's all in 44 West, yeah.
Yeah. And explain a put option, please, Jamie, to me and my viewers.
Sure. So a put option simply allows you to make a sale of Bitcoin at a specific price on a specific date. So if, let's say you went in the market right now and bought a $70,000 strike put option that expires tomorrow, let's just say. If Bitcoin goes down to 60,000 tomorrow, you can still sell that put at set. You can still sell that Bitcoin at $70,000.
Yeah. Okay.
So essentially what it does, so you pay a premium to buy the put, and essentially what it does is it locks in a price. And if your production is somewhat predictable, you can match the amount of put coverage you have with the amount of production that you expect.
Have you dabbled in hash rate derivatives at all? Selling your hash rate forward and locking in your revenue that way?
It's funny. We're strongly considering it. Let's put it that way. Right now, the way the effective funding rate is there, it seems like an attractive option versus any other debt equity type of option.
Okay, because this is the way, and again, please correct me because you're the expert on this, right? What you're saying is, hey, we're going to mine Bitcoin, and whatever Bitcoin we get, that's what we're going to play with, and that's what we're going to have our put options on, and that's what we're going to, you know, use our financial expertise on to make sure that the that we get the fiat revenue from this that we need to cover our expenses and our overheads, right? But selling and buying hash rate forward is like, you know, in the vertical integration game, one step further or further down the chain, right? Where you're saying, hey, I'm going to lock in my revenue directly, whether that be in Bitcoin terms or in dollar terms. Would this be again for expansion reasons that you would consider doing this? And when you say funding rate, what does that mean? It just costs you less?
Effective cost of capital. So by the time you you execute and it's actually a two-step process. So you pair a deliverable contract with a non-deliverable contract, and the net is your cost of capital. Without going too much in the weeds on that, but to answer the question, one precludes the other. So if you're going to sell forward hash rate, and in theory, if you sold all your hash rate forward, then you wouldn't really have a need for put options, because you'd be selling that. You'd basically be pulling forward your expected mining earnings. And then if the price of Bitcoin were to go down, your obligation is still the same as specified at the beginning of the contract.
And you said you're strongly considering it. What's the debate like internally about this? Is it about the amount that you're selling forward, or at what price?
Yeah, it's the amount. It's that option versus other options. So we have to. I would say we're still in the evaluation process in terms of raising money in the near term, which is the best, most effective way to do it. So right now, we're strongly considering forward hash rate as a good option.
What are the other options?
I mean, you have straight equity investments, lenders.
We already covered? Yeah. Okay, understood. Yep. And how do you? Because I'm curious, right? Because I don't think I've had any miners on who were thinking about doing this. I'm sure you've seen Luxus bid and ask spreads on hash rate derivatives. What are your thoughts around that and the liquidity that you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a highly innovative idea, and I commend them for bringing this to market. And I think with, like most new markets that launch, liquidity is going to be a challenge. You know, I think they're generating more support as they go and market the product. It's certainly something that the users will have the best experience as liquidity is added. So it's almost self-fulfilling in that sense. But it's a unique lending alternative, or it's a unique fundraising alternative that acts like a loan but is an off balance sheet loan. So it's an attractive option, and you know we're watching it, hoping that the market develops where you get some market making presence in there, and bid ask spreads collapse a little bit, and we think that'll happen over time. Again, it's a new market, and with new markets, it does take a little time for that to develop.
Liquidity, is the name of the game, right? Which yes. And your hash rate is very sought after, I guess, in that respect, because I don't think enough miners have yet dabbled with the same idea, right? They'd rather go public, and once they're public, they don't have that need. Or they're so large, like there's this funding gap, I feel like, mm-hmm. for smaller operations that want to scale up. And I'm kind of trying to figure out how people solve that issue. And I agree with you that certainly hash rate derivatives are a way to do that. And maybe also with just a random thought here, like if you roll over your fleet, right, and you're buying, I don't know, S19Ks to dump them, or M60s to dump them, or whatever, you could certainly ROI the machines also much quicker, right, if you sold your hash rate forward for 6 months already. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. To your point, there is a funding gap. So you have your public miners, which have access to the public markets, obviously, and then you have operations that are conceptual, that, you know, maybe it's more of a VC crowd there, and then you have operations like us who are operating. We're a little below what we need to go public, but what are the alternatives? I mean, 3-4 years ago, there were a number of different options with securitized lending and equipment financing and things like that. And those options are still there, but not to the extent that they were. I think there was a lot of pain going back to the lean times. So it's not as available. When it's available, it's a little more expensive. So I think this hash rate derivative forwards contract comes at a good time. You know, it's a reasonable, a reasonable cost of capital. It's an alternative source of fundraising that doesn't involve debt. It doesn't involve equity. So we're in favor of it. If the numbers make sense and the liquidity is there, we're going to participate.
I just had a thought, Jamie. I'd like to have your feedback. When you try to scale up an operation, how important do you think marketing is for that, to get the brand out there, to put it in front of more people? I just saw, and I'll give them a shout out here because they're doing it very well. I don't know if you heard of Satoki Mining.
Yes.
The Satoki team is doing this very well, right? They built their site, they have a couple containers there, and now they're just putting out content left, right, and center about their operations, their team, their excellence, but they're in the same exact position as you guys. I think where it's about now finding the necessary capital to scale up. Is that something you guys have considered as well? Is it not your focus point at all? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, there is a place for marketing and advertising. We have not done a lot of it. And you know, I think it's a chicken and egg thing. What comes first? Is it do you build the operation and prove the concept, prove you can do it, and then start to market? Or do you market ahead of that and try to raise money and get it done that way? So we've chosen the former, where our efforts have gone into learning how to repair machines, learning how to optimize uptime, learning how to optimize our energy rate and operating at a healthy rate. So we've done all that over the past 8 months. Now we're in a position where we're probably ready to do a little more marketing. And that's actually been a difference of opinion amongst us in terms of the speed of how to do that. And I won't say who wants to push on that and who doesn't, but that's been a source of, you know, one of those minor disagreements in terms of which direction to go. But I think to answer the question, I think it is extremely important, especially with the visibility that you can have with minimal effort now on different channels and reaching out to, you know, very targeted crowds.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a piece of it, right? What we're doing right now, right? I'm going to put your face in front of 100,000 subscribers and their timelines. And then anywhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people will probably consume this content. And then they will, you know, maybe talk to their colleagues or whoever, and they might want to do exactly this. And then I look at your company more, reach out, have a scheduled meeting. And like, it goes from there. And so I've never been a marketing person, right? I started this as a hobby, because my wife told me to speak to a mic instead of her about energy and Bitcoin mining, pretty much. Started it in German. I went to English because it's just more interesting content to be made there. Yeah, and now it's on Swan's YouTube channel through a partnership. Yeah. And there's definitely a place for it because not a lot of people understand mining. I don't think a lot of capital understands mining and the opportunities that come with filling that funding gap. And so, yeah, maybe that's also sort of more in the future. To sort of towards the end here, Jamie, I'd like to understand, first of all, you and your family, would you guys do this again? Would you go into mining again? Or have you been like, fuck, why did we get into this, Dad? Thanks.
No, it's been a good ride. And I think we've learned so much over the past 4 years that we're so far ahead of where we were that, if we were to, if you could take us in a vacuum and say, would you start from knowing what you know, would you start again? I think we would.
And if you said you guys were exploring consulting, what are sort of the first two things that come to mind that you want to give people if they're exploring the same idea as you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, it's the timing and logistics of setting up a Bitcoin mining operation, which I don't think is well understood. Certainly, we didn't understand it when we started. And then the procurement of assets, you know, and that's obviously very important to, but I think those two things, just again, just by virtue of the fact that we've done it now for 3+ years, I think we're in a position to offer some of that. But again, that's just an offshoot sort of revenue stream off the platform, you know, that I think we can offer.
All right. Jamie, is there anything that you wish I had asked you that I haven't?
Anything yeah, I think, what was the biggest surprise?
Okay.
In this process.
So what was the biggest surprise in this process?
the biggest surprise was at some point in time we had to put up a little barbed wire fence to keep cows away from the equipment. We weren't expecting that. Yeah, we were not expecting that. So now we have a little barbed wire fence in place so that cows don't lean on the containers.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of other scenarios in the UAE where I was sent pictures of farms and like goats running around in between the racks.
Right. It's a charming,
safest environment.
It's a charming place to be because you have antelope, you have cows, you have bunnies out there, but you don't want them getting into the equipment.
Yeah. Did you ever hear that story about the bugs and the gridless containers?
No.
Have you heard of gridless?
Yes.
Yeah. So Eric tells this story much better than I do, but I frequently share it with folks because it's just such a incredible story. So they're mining in Kenya in the jungle, right? And there's bugs there. And these bugs come in swarms, and when they fly in front of a light that they get attracted to, it sort of darkens out the room because there's so many of them and they're so voluminous, right? And so at some point someone had forgot to close the container up that with all the ASICs inside and left the lights on. And at some point they would just get these notifications on their phone as to, you know, like efficiency is going down. Why is that? What's happening here? And it turned out that these bugs had flown inside the container. And the very next day, which is also something that they would never probably have thought they would have to do, they all sat there with toothbrushes cleaning hashboards. But the cool thing about the story, Jamie, is that these machines were still running. And it also explains why folks in Africa tend to be micro BT maxis. Right, because these machines did not turn off. They kept hashing, albeit at a lower rate. But like a swarm of bugs had just been sucked into that container. And they probably never forget that again. You know, to to lock that thing up.
Tight. Don't leave the door open. No, do not leave the door open.
Jamie, last question: do you think that Bitcoin uses enough electricity or not?
You know, I don't think there's going to be a single thing that spurs investment in renewables quite like Bitcoin. So to the extent that that continues, and obviously, you know, miners are going to look for the lowest source of power, and oftentimes that is in a renewable form. So to the extent that continues, my answer is no, it does not.
I'm with you. Like this, all your answers have been short and sweet. I really appreciate it. Very different style of interview. I'm sure my viewers will appreciate it also. Tell people where to find you, Jamie. Where can they get linked up with you guys if they want to?
Sure. So we're on LinkedIn and Instagram on the social. We're on Twitter also. We don't do a whole lot there, but 44westmining.com is our website, and find us there.
Guys, I hope you learned something new. Next Sunday, we speak mining again. Thank you very much, Jamie, again for your time and for all your answers. I love that the fact that your dad got you into this. And now you're looking to scale up to 20 megawatts. I think it's a great story and one that more people should explore repeating. Yeah, I really enjoyed myself, learned a lot, especially with the financial background that you guys have. And it's interesting that you guys are exploring hash rate derivatives to pull some of that revenue forward. If you learn anything new, please, you know what to do. Swan and I will appreciate any comments, questions, likes, and all of the below that you can find on a YouTube video. I'm not sure who's going to be on next. I think we have Marathon in the pipeline for second one on Kenya. We got Stronghold coming up as well, another public miner, and yeah, much more. Guys, stay tuned. Until next time, have a good Sunday.